EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us on EMS Leadership. And 6 shopping days left till Christmas, and we're going to call this the Year in Review Show. And, you know, hopefully you got all your Christmas shopping done. I'm doing little by little, and hopefully I'll have mine done by the weekend. But you never know. There's always that last-minute stuff that we're happy to go out and do. You know, we have our normal cast of characters. We're going to bring in Don and Patrick and Rob here in a little bit. And I thought it'd be really cool just to kind of talk about the year and what 2013 meant to EMS. I want to look forward to 2014 as to see, you know, what that's going to entail and what we can hope for in 2014. And then maybe we come to you with a little bit of New Year's resolution and we see how we end that show that way. So first off, Don Lundy, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Chris. And again, thanks for having me on the show. It's so awesome. I heard from somebody via email this week that listens to it, and I'm so fortunate to have people out there that actually listen. But, I mean, I'm so blessed to have people that want to listen to this show, and I'm just blessed to be on it.
Now, you know, I paid that guy to email you.
So that was well, it really is. It's amazing to me. I'm still kind of new to the podcast world, and it's amazing to me the number of people. It's amazing to me. Certainly it's not to everybody else because the folks that I get to talk with Patrick and Rob and everybody is way more talented than I'll ever be, and I continually take notes when I listen to them because they have such great pieces of information. So it's just an honor for me to be with this crowd.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things, and we kind of talked about this when the show ended last week. I mean, this is like the Wednesday with the boys. I mean, because we record the shows on Wednesday, and it takes me a little bit of time to get them edited and get them uploaded so you guys can hear them out there. But, you know, this is the time we get together, you know, I got a little scotch in my hand, got a little cigar in my hand, you know, Patrick's hanging out in his t-shirt, how do I know that? I accidentally put the video on before. So, you know, but this is really a good time. So, as you thank me of, you know, you being on the show, and you've kind of been a staple, I think when you're not here, we don't have good shows. This is really the week with hanging out with the boys, so I really appreciate that. So let's go ahead to California, and we have T-Shirt Man out there, Patrick Pianezza. Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. How is sunny California?
Not as sunny right now. The nights are getting longer, just like I'm sure it is on everywhere else in the country, but it's a very chilly 50 degrees. I don't know if we're going to be able to make it through the night, but we're going to try.
You know, the nights got longer in October, so I just want you to know that.
Thanks. So,
all right, and we'll go out to the East Coast, and Rob Lawrence joins us again. Rob, how are you, sir?
I'm very, very well, thank you, Chris. And, of course, my opening thought is, you say a nice scene with the boys. Well, the boys have a combined age of in excess of 200. So this is a fantastic night in. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, that's not fair because I know that we're all in our 40s. So that's not good to put Don in his 60s. So
speak for yourself.
Well, I'll get the over than you, then, whatever Chris. It was the other day.
That's right. Don't ruin it. So, guys, let's go ahead and think about 2013. I mean, there was a lot of things going on, and we think about our organizations, and we think about the mission, and we think about kind of where we moved to, and a lot of things went on. You know, we had some great conferences that we went to, mobile integrated healthcare. It looks like that seems to be the point. You know, I've said it before, is it going to be community paramedicine, advanced practice paramedics? It looks like mobile integrated healthcare is becoming the nomenclature for this new direction that we're doing. But if I can ask you, and Rob, maybe I'll start with you, in the sense of, what did 2013 mean to you professionally, EMS-wise?
Well, professionally, EMS-wise, it's another year where we, as an organization here on the East Coast, have grown. We have the luxury of having a top team that's now worked and served together for many, many years. And what does that mean? Does it mean you'll get fed up with each other? Well, no, it doesn't. It means that we're able to become smoother, slicker, and more and more and more focused on delivering world-class EMS. So for us, it's been a very great year of consolidation. It's been a great year of the big push, and the big push literally is to get more and more and more people delivering hands-only CPR at every opportunity. We started off with, you know, a week a year, and now we're just taking every chance, whether it's three people or 300. And so we're pushing, again, no pun intended, we're pushing our way through this last year, and we intend to continue doing it in the next year. So it's been a great year for us and hopefully for our patients.
Sounds good. And Don, if I could ask you, I mean, being the president of NEET, we know you run a class organization out there in the last bastion of civilization in Charleston, South Carolina. Professionally, though, as far as the EMS career field, I mean, you've made a lot of strides to move the organization forward and get things happening as far as the EMS scene goes. Maybe you can give us what 2013 meant for the career field overall.
I think one of the biggest things that I see, and I continue to discuss it with people that ask me about it, is the transition, and I think it's a transition, from a certificate position to a degreed position. Not as large as we'd like to see, but certainly larger than it's been in several years. And I think that's attuned to most of the people in the field who realize that that is one of the futures of EMS. If you're going to go forward, whether a paramedic in the field or a supervisor or a training officer or management or whatever you're going to do, for years, and I'm an old guy, so I can go back and say, you know, for years we complained that nurses made more than us, so-and-so made more, the physical therapist made more than us, and we had the answer right in front of us. They went out and got a professional degree and came back, and the employers wanted that. Now, I'm constantly asked by people, well, you know, a degree doesn't make a paramedic a better paramedic. Absolutely agree, especially regarding the skills. I know that there are paramedics who do not have a college degree who are tremendous clinicians, tremendous technicians. But if we're going to move off that space to get the salaries that we think is deserved of the position, we can't be technicians anymore. We need to look a little bit beyond that. And anybody that sees what is happening to healthcare, it should be staring them right in the face that we aren't going to be technicians anymore. Community paramedicine, you talked about, that is not a technician issue. And I know for adults, older adults, that's very scary to go back to school. I'm an adult that went back to school at 42, scared to death. I had a group of 22-year-olds, really great students. And the hardest part was stepping into the classroom the first day. And at the end of that class, everybody agrees that you know everything because you're 42 and they know nothing. It's a great place to be. It's a great place to be with these students that really do know a heck of a lot about their job and their career. And here's the trick to the whole thing. If you look at the career as far as the educational aspect of it, with accreditation coming down the road and with us wanting to do more, let's just say Lundy's crazy and you don't need a degree, but I'm going to go get one anyhow. If you're starting from scratch, it's probably 4 to 6 years. If you've got 2 years under your belt, it's another 2 years and maybe 5 or 6 months. At the end of that time, you'll have a degree that will, on average, increase your salary, your take-home pay, tremendously. And the guy next to you says, I don't need no stinking degree. He'll just be older. And that's really what drove me to make that change. And I don't regret that at all. I think that's one of the biggest changes in the EMS career is we are making, we're watching it happen. We're changing from technicians to clinicians. And we just can't do that by getting another card or another certificate.
Yeah, and I think the challenge, as you mentioned it, is, you know, we're putting a lot of work in. Going to college, paying those bills, getting those degrees, whether you're doing it in EMS management, whether you're doing it in healthcare management or business administration, wherever you're going with it. But the big question is now, who's going to pay for that? And are you going to be able to start paying top dollar for a bachelor's degree, especially now as we're moving into a portion of our career field where there's no reimbursement? But with that said, Don, I will agree with you that even as EMS leaders now, a lot of the positions that are getting are looking to be open, they are looking for bachelor's degrees. And now even the bachelor's degrees are starting to become extinct, and they're going to want master's degrees. And you see it all the time. So speaking of master's degrees, we'll go out to, you know, to Patrick, and I'll ask you, University of South Carolina, isn't that where you were?
That's it.
Yeah. So if I ask you, and you're our resident paramedic slash hospital director, so when we think about just the year in medicine, and you have that experience and you have that, you know, kind of that line of sight of what's going on from a hospital facility, how did 2013 change the hospitals as they're moving forward?
Well, I think if you look at the way hospitals are looking and moving forward, you've got value-based purchasing that came into effect in 2013 and actually started impacting reimbursements this year. So that was a huge change where hospitals went from, yeah, patient sat's important, and yeah, core measures are important, and we're keeping an eye on it, to, oh my God, it's 2013 and now our checkbook's being affected by it. So I think that was a huge change. You're also seeing changes in regulatory. The Affordable Care Act is an enormous change that's going to be impacting healthcare for quite some time to come. So those are really the two things that I can see that really changed the way that hospitals are doing business. I think they're going to start looking to be much more nimble, much more innovative, because right now there's so much riding on it, including our reimbursements. I mean, we're going to bundled payments and accountable care organizations. So the one thing I like about healthcare is that it's never the same day twice, and that seems to be the future moving forward. My only word of caution is don't be that person that is running around like the sky is falling, like Chicken Little. Try to be proactive. You may not like everything that's coming down the pike, but being able to innovate and being able to adapt to the changes that are always going to be coming, it's never going to be like it was yesterday, is really what's going to make you successful. And to piggyback off of what Don said, you know, I'm a guy with, you know, 3 degrees. I've got an associate's degree. I've got a certificate in paramedic, which back then wasn't a degree. It was just a certificate. I've got a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. And I'll be the first person to stand up and tell you a degree does not make you smart, but a degree gets you in the door. And that's really something I stress with a lot of my peers, a lot of the people that I talk to that are going into healthcare, and I hear a lot of the same stuff. You know, paramedics shouldn't need degrees, and I echo 100% what Don said. If you want to be taken seriously, and if we're going to move towards this community paramedicine, it's something that we need to do. Nursing is a perfect example. They're phasing out the ADN programs, and most places won't hire you unless you have a BSN now. So you can beat your chest and say, I'm just as good a paramedic with just a license. And I will tell you that I would say probably in the next 5 years, you won't even be able to get the interview without some form of a degree.
Yeah, and I have to go with you to say that I don't know that it's going to be 5 years. I think it's going to be more like 2 or 3. But, you know, Patrick, I think you brought up a lot of good points. This is the second show that we did in a row where we mentioned value-based purchasing. And as we get into 2014, we probably need to have a show, you and I, and just kind of go over these nomenclatures. Rob brought that up to us last week, that said that a lot of folks don't know. But since you brought up value-based purchasing again, just give the listeners a little taste of what value-based purchasing means to a hospital.
Sure. So when you boil it down, value-based purchasing just means a part of your Medicare reimbursements, which is it's the largest payer for healthcare in the country. Right now, as of 2013, 1% of your Medicare basket was at risk. And without getting into too many details, what happens is 1% of the hospital's money goes away into a bank account in Washington, D.C. If you do really, really good, you get that 1% and then some back. If you do really, really bad, your money's gone. And if you do okay, you might make that 1% back. So it's really an incentive program for hospitals to provide better care at a cheaper rate and be more effective. And they rate that based on those patient experience scores and this clinical measure called core measures, which we'll take an entire show to go through that. But basically know that their Medicare reimbursement, a percentage of that increases every year. So 2014, it's going to be 1.25%. In 2015, it's 1.5%. And it's scheduled out, I think, through 2018. So hospitals are worried about this. It's a huge chunk of money. I mean, I could tell you at our organization that 1% was $500,000. So it's something that people are thinking and talking about quite a bit.
And when you talk about a profit margin of 1%, that's really getting into the bottom line. And that's where the community paramedic aspect of things really kind of comes into play, that we can help them, you know, save that money. And, you know, that's really where we need to be getting into. But, Rob, let's go ahead and bring you in here and talk about, you know, EMS. And if you think about over the year, what is the one thing, if you could put your finger on one thing, that really kind of impressed you that this career field is really changing?
I think the career field is changing for the better in terms of the systems that we're giving our folk to operate, the technology, the everything from an electronic patient care record through to, you know, the latest and greatest device, whether it's a scope that's got a camera on it, etc. We are showing that we're progressing because we are now entrusting our people with much more complex, much more technical equipment. And one of our local ED gurus came around one day and said, you know, the only thing that's missing from this truck that's different from the ED is the hospital bed, because you guys can make and take life-giving, life-taking away decisions in this truck before you get to the ED. So we are equipping our workforce now with the mechanical and digital and clinical devices that is going to match the education set that you just talked about. And so we are, you know, we're accelerating into a very high-tech environment in which we can turn our trucks into that mini ED, which of course helps serve the whole mobile healthcare thing. So we're getting very technologically advanced very quickly, and you can see the changes just happening now. Our guys are learning new skills, new tricks of the trade, and of course with every new skill and every new trick of the trade, it means that survivability and outcomes, of course, are that much better.
Don, I want to ask you the same question. 2013, what was your big aha moment for our career field?
Well, I think clearly when you, I've been blessed all year to be able to talk to people who, you know, who are very excited about the things that are going on and the difference. I mean, if you just look at, for example, NFPA 1917 or Triple K 1822 or the safety design of an ambulance, you know, that's exciting stuff. I mean, that's really going to change the interior of where we work. When you look at governments in general, and let's look at the federal government for a minute, this has been a real tough year, and I don't think I'm saying anything that anybody doesn't know. It's been a tough year to believe in the federal government. It's been a tough year to believe that anything good was going to come out of anywhere, because I think, number one, the cynicism has set in, and number two, there's some real struggles with some of the programs that are out there that are going to have a direct effect on EMS. I truly think the aha moment for me was at EMS Today, when we talked about designing and putting up that paramedic healthcare pre-con, and we kind of scratched our head and said, why don't we make seats for 200? I mean, 200's a lot for a pre-con. Let's do that. Chris, you know what my day's like. I'm being led around from one meeting to the next, and I kind of know what they are. I have a card in my hand and everything, and I've studied the night before. But when I walked in there, and we got a chance to break for a minute, and I said, I want to go see this integrated healthcare thing. And instead of 200, they had broken out another room and had 400, and there were people standing in the back and standing in the sides. And when they broke for a break for like 5 minutes, no one moved. Nobody said, let's get out of here. They stayed until 5 and 5:30 and 6 o'clock. That was the aha moment for me. I looked at that crowd and I thought, you know, it's not just me and it's not just us and it's not just an EMT. Everybody's excited about whatever this is going to be. And what's so cool about it is we don't know what it is. And you know, a lot of people would say, well, that scares me. No, that doesn't for me. A lot of us grew up in the time when we didn't even know what we were doing. We didn't have a textbook. We didn't have and I can't tell you how exciting it was to start EMS and say, I don't know, do you think we ought to carry atropine? Really? Do you think so? Well, then let's do it. There wasn't a book that said you should always carry atropine for bradycardia or whatever. So that to me was when I realized that everybody was energized, that there are lots of people out there ready to dig their hands into the dirt and get dirty and get this thing done.
Patrick, for you, your biggest aha moment for the year 2013 for our career field?
You know, I think it was change. And I will tell you the one, my big aha moment, and it had to do with the Boston Marathon bombing and watching. I mean, we all remember 9/11 and how terrible that was, but when I was watching the coverage for the Boston attack, I saw a different type of attack, because I wasn't really watching what the talking heads were doing. I was trying to see past the cameras and watch the responders. And I think our attack of mass casualty events has increased 200-fold. And for me, it was that validation that we're learning from what we've done in the past. And I really don't know how to articulate it very clearly, but to me, it was very comforting, even though it was a tragic event, to see that as a profession, we are attacking the problems differently, and that we were you could see the way that they were approaching the patients, and you could see some of the responses weren't as detrimental as they were, obviously, in that terrible tragedy of 9/11. So, not to bring down the feeling of the thing to a bit somber, but that was my aha moment for the year regarding EMS.
Yeah, and we did do a show, and we sent a shout out to Boston EMS. You know, the way that they handled that was great for their city, but it was also a pat on the back for the career field because they really did it right. And you see a lot of news that comes from cities that there are some embarrassing moments, but it was a very, very low point for the city of Boston, but it came out with a great outcome that they really need to be given the pat on the back for their effort. Rob, Don brought something up, and I want to kind of switch gears a little bit. This year, we see a lot more ambulance accidents, and we see a lot more folks in EMS getting hurt because of these accidents. You know, as a chief, I can get as big a truck as I want. I got a longer wheelbase. They got the trucks now that got the backs in them that you could sit 4 and 6 people in them. What is it going to take now for our career field to open their eyes to say, we've got to stop building bigger and better and start thinking about the people who are riding in the back of these ambulances?
Say, the gift of a question. It comes right back down to the overarching culture of safety, which is another feature of this last year that we've talked about it, and everything that we've done and we've talked about both on here and in the industry has been geared towards safety. Now, of course, my first... I'm dismayed and disappointed every time I put one of our fantastic trade websites on to see the next truck that's splattered, opened up like a banana with some tragedy that's befallen the crew or the patient. So first thing is that trucks don't crash trucks. People crash trucks. And so what we have to do is make sure that we have prepared our crewmen, our vehicle operators, dare I say, the dreaded ambulance driver, and you know, if you're not the driver, who is, to actually operate the equipment that we're giving them. Our equipment is more expensive than some, you know, our ambulances are more expensive than a Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost. We have to prepare folk to deliver healthcare and to get there by driving safely, skillfully, in no matter what you're driving. So let's say that, let's get that out of the way first of all. Secondly, I'm considered somewhat of a heretic sometimes, of course, because I came from the UK where we had the sprinter-based box, albeit with a box on, but they were a sprinter-based size, and was quite taken aback, really, at the over-generous super-sized vehicles that we have here. People here will argue and shout that they need the room to operate, they need room to deliver the care and to you know, move their hands and stand up, etc. But Europe... And of course, we now know from places like the Retmobile exhibition, where they're showing the safety and, of course, the European SEN standard of vehicle design, which governs the forces at work. I'm sorry, I'll turn my cell phone off. Which governs the forces at work in a vehicle in an incident. We must, you know, you have to be prepared to withstand the crash. So rounding up then, you know, we need to realize that, you know, big sometimes isn't beautiful. Functional is beautiful. Safe is beautiful. We just had a NIOSH study in at Richmond where they measured everybody, looked at how people react in 5-point harness seatbelts in order to promote the culture of safety. So let's design something that is functional but safe. But we have to get over the whole, and this is an Englishman saying this, the whole American, I need to have the biggest possible truck on the road. We don't. And it's as simple as that.
So, Don, I mean, Rob brought up Retmobile, and that's an annual show in Germany, and they really kind of showcase what ambulances are about in Europe. So, give us a little bit about what you took from Retmobile and what we maybe can expect to see in the future.
Before we talk about the design of the ambulance, and there are some tremendous designs out there that we're going to see, I think this next year is going to be an aha moment for a lot of people that have said, what in the world could they do to the back of the ambulance to make it better? And I think they'll see some things, really exciting things. But before we do that, before we decide the size of the truck, before we talk about is it small, is it big, we must, as professionals, decide that we're going to wear a seatbelt in the back of the ambulance. Now, this is my 39th year. I have never worn a seatbelt in the back of an ambulance, maybe once or twice. So I am I'm the dog that's speaking that's never done it. And I understand when people hear that and they roll their eyes and they go, geez, you know, this is the guy's the seatbelt guy. I'm not going to be able to do my job. Well, certainly not in the trucks that we have right now. The total design is going to have to be made differently. But the idea that we can make a safer truck and have the second heaviest thing loose in the back is just another formula for a lot of people dying. We've strapped down the stretcher, which I think is probably one of the heaviest things. We've strapped down the monitor. We've made sure all the doors are closed. We made sure everything's got a bungee cord on it. And then, I guess in some ambulances, might be the heaviest thing. And then the one human who's standing there that's going to break everybody as they crash around in that box is unrestrained and walking free. There are pilots of planes and people who drive cargo trucks that, when they find out we do that, they're just appalled. They can't believe that the people who wear their safety jackets, who say safety first, who say, is the scene safe, get in a truck in the back and bounce around there. And if the truck rolls, well, you know, too bad on you. We've got to change that culture. And that's a huge culture shift, even though, for the most part, I think people use their seatbelts in the front. And in order, of course, which comes with that, the design has to be so that when you're strapped in, you can treat 80% of the patient from the knees up. And that's what this new design is going to do. And you can grab probably 70-80% of your equipment, and the stuff you can't grab, you get before you sit down. It doesn't mean you're not going to have to get up because something happens, but the idea of just freely walking about the back of a truck is just a formula for disaster. So I think when coming out of this, talking to everybody, and by the way, I didn't get to go to Germany this year. I was over in London at the community paramedic roundtable, but I did get a chance to look at some of the UK ambulances, and the idea that you would be unstrapped in that culture is just unheard of. That's really awkward to them. So I think that's going to be the thing to me is we can build any truck we want, we can build any size we want, we can make the truck do what we want to do, but if we can't change the culture of really being safe, it's a moot point.
Let me get conversational on that for a second, because I come back to point around it's people that crash the trucks, not trucks crash the trucks. We're coming up with some really good innovative ideas. We had people around, as I say, measuring and looking at the trucks, and we did some videoing on the culture of safety as well. But when we come up with a new truck has a six-figure, potentially, price tag to it. And so for most organizations to change their fleets out overnight, it's not going to happen in a month of Sundays. It's going to be an evolution over 5, 6, 7 years. And so whilst we look to redesign the vehicles, we must also look to readjust the focus of the vehicle operator, the driver, to make sure that they're driving the vehicles safely as well. So we have to do two things. We have to prepare the workforce with training to come up to the point until we can actually insert the vehicles that are also fit for tasks. So it's another, you know, 2020 program vision issue. We've got 6 years to get there, because you're not going to swap your fleet out overnight unless you were that one person that drops one of two people that dropped the lottery the other day.
But one of the things that I want to ask, and I'll just kind of throw this out, when we think about the ambulances and them getting bigger and bigger, do we really need to carry all the equipment that we carry? I mean, back in the old days, I mean, Don and I were in old days, listen to me, but Don and I were kind of chatting earlier this week, and he started out, he was in the Cadillacs, and that was before the horse and buggy, but it was the Cadillacs, and we didn't have the equipment that we have today. Are we putting ourselves in a position that we have bigger trucks because we're carrying bigger equipment?
I've worked in van-style ambulances to box-style ambulances to very, very large critical care trucks that are essentially a mobile ICU. I think you have to be sincerely – you have to take a hard look at what does your operation provide, or what does your service provide. If you're, in fact, a mobile ICU unit doing critical care transfer, ICU to ICU transfers – then I think you have to be able to provide that level of service that, you know, requires a nurse and a respiratory therapist and all of that. if you're doing strict 911, I think, again, and it, this depends from state to state as well, because I know states sometimes regulate the what has to be inside of an ambulance. But sometimes some of the additional repetition, is it necessary? I don't know. That's going to take a real hardline look at things. But I would say that most of your technological things are getting smaller as they just like any other technology. I mean, the monitor I first started out, Pat, with was with the LifePak 10s, which were enormous monstrosities. They were like little desks with the paddles on them. So now that Philips monitor, I can't remember what the model number is, but it's fairly small and has a hands-free pad. So I think the technological things are getting smaller. I mean, the ventilator I was working with over at Hall Ambulance over here was literally the size of a toaster. And so I think the technology is allowing us to get things smaller. But I would be careful. If you're carrying around 12 backboards and you're saying that that's a necessity, I would say you need to reevaluate. But I will agree, bigger is not better. That critical care truck was enormous. You could have played basketball in the back of that thing. But anybody who says you have to have it, I would ask them to take a look at a helicopter crew and say, you know what, look at what these helicopters and the crews in the helicopter are able to do with such a confined space. So I'm with Rob in saying that bigger is not necessarily better. I think you need to look at your what it is that your service is saying that they provide, and provide for up to that level of service, and really taking a hard look at what is it that we have to do in order to meet what our community needs.
That touched on one of my pet peeves, actually, and perhaps we can have a pet peeve section later as well, Chris. But the amount of kit and equipment on a truck should be organizationally set, and Patrick mentioned that. But there's always the danger as well, where you have organizations where you have a crew that look after one truck, or it's a volunteer squad, let's say, that have the one truck and they're always on it. There's always the tendency to add stuff just because you never know. And what happens there is it becomes a waste in terms of there's probably stock kit and equipment on there that's about to run out of date, run out of service. And in this day and age of you know, corporate coffers, that's also a hemorrhage of cash. And, you know, we also have to be fiscally responsible going forward, too, because, as we know, the money could run out. So that was one of my little issues that I don't have in Richmond, because we have a make-ready system. But I've certainly seen in my old organization, when we had individual stations, there would be massive hoards of kit that when we had a clear out, there was had to go to waste because it had run out of date.
Yeah, when we went to a standardization of our ambulances when I first came up here to St. Louis, in one day, we took off $70,000 of overstock. And we just keep piling that stuff in there thinking it's a warehouse, and we really need to consider or second guess kind of what we're carrying. But Don, let's take a switch, man. Let's look at 2014. So a lot of things to go on in our career field. I know from the national side, from the president of NEMT side, the field EMS bill, hopefully we're going to get a little bit more traction on that. But what are some of the things that we could start to look forward to, or that we really kind of need to make happen in 2014?
Certainly start it with the field bill. And I know that most everybody who is energized by that understands that this isn't a race of the rabbit. This is a turtle race. This is a slow 5 to 6 year progress, and we're making tremendous progress. We're getting people signed on, and we're getting people interested in it. I think a lot of times we think, you know, we're the medics. This should be easy, and it wasn't easy for nurses or doctors or any of those professions out there, airline pilots or TCA guys or anything. So it shouldn't be easy for us either. But I think seriously that act will change EMS for the next 50 years, at least 50 years, not the next day. It's going to change the entire atmosphere, the financial health, the profession of EMS for the next 50 years. That's how important I think it is. So that's why we continue to be on that. I think we need to get the veterans bill through. There's a lot of great vets coming offline that need to be able to be certified or to grab their certification back, because I want to hire them. And I say that from an EMS director's point of view. I want to hire them. I've already hired several from the Air Force here at Joint Base Charleston. They're awesome employees. They're the kind of people we want to hire. So I think that's one thing we can really look forward to. And I think if we truly think about the education that's out there, and I'm not going to talk about degrees anymore, so everybody settle down. But I think if we talk about the the education that's coming up, the TCCC course that everybody's used to. We talked about it today, actually, with our organization, and I know many are. We have lived in a bubble for, in my opinion, the last 10 years, that the scene should be safe and we should not go into a dangerous scene. We should sit out here and wait until they kill the bad guy and then we'll go in and get people. And I've had lots of medics when I've mentioned that, no, we really do need to be involved in the warm zone and maybe even the red zone. And medics look at me like I'm crazy and they said, no, that's not safe. We don't live in a tactical world. Several medics looked at me and said, we're not tactical. And I mentioned to them, at 9/11, we all became tactical, and we step into tactical situations every day in every home. We have been lucky enough to only have one paramedic in the state I stand corrected, we've had two paramedics shot. One was killed, and this was a bad guy trying to get away, and he just got the best of the medic. He turned on the medic. But the very first paramedic ever shot in the state was shot by a 62-year-old woman with belly pain. There was nothing to show what was going to happen, but it was, in fact, a tactical situation. So I think when we look out in the future, there's going to be a future where if there's a school shooting or a shooting in a mall, we are going to enter with the entry team and take care of patients and back them out and plug the drain and drag them out of that mall alive instead of waiting for the bad guy to be shot and then going and counting bodies. I really do think that's something that we need to get over. We need to get with our law enforcement brethren who, admittedly probably are not in the instant command system as well as we would like, but they are getting much closer and they realize, we're the good guys and they're the good guys. I think, and that boils down to one major issue I think that's going to be over the next year. We've talked about it for years about collaborating with other public safety entities. We're serious, and it's working in so many places. And for those people listening to the podcast, and they go, "Oh man, I'm never going to go along with that fire chief, or the police chief's never going to listen to me." I feel so sorry that you're unable to do that because there's a wealth of information and help, like you could not believe. But you have to reach your hand out and say, "Hi, I'm the EMS director here," and you sheriff, what can I help you with? The collaboration that we're going to make with organizations, some of which we don't even think about, is going to be tremendous.
Patrick, what do you think?
I'm an internal optimist. What can I say? I started this career and shuffling my feet like a bunch of other guys going, nobody respects us till they need us, and even then they don't care, and da-da-da. And I'm seeing such great movement in that direction. Don touched on the education about requiring a degree and the continuing of the buy-in with other community. I was very fortunate in South Carolina. We worked hand in hand. In fact, we were part of the police department. We ultimately, the chain of command ran up through the sheriff. So we had a wonderful relationship with our police department and our fire service. But I know for a fact that that's not the case all over the place. And I start to see that these, we're making strides to improve the patient outcome. We're seeing by this podcast alone, by the number of hits, the people that are listening. And by the way, if you are listening, congratulations, you're part of the educated group. I want to thank you for that too. But we're seeing that all of these things that have been anecdotally mentioned as being important are starting to gain some traction. And we're starting to see a lot of movement there. And to me, that's what I see coming down the pike in 2014 is more of that culture of safety. I mean, I'm a guy who has been in two ambulance wrecks, and I can honestly say I wasn't driving in either case, and I was very fortunate. I actually didn't get hurt too bad. But yeah, that culture of safety thing is something we always joked about with, we're standing up in the back of that truck, and it doesn't necessarily mean that the guy driving the ambulance is doing a bad job, but you know how people get when you turn those lights and sirens on, they slam on the brakes, and you got to swerve to avoid them, and if there's nothing to hold you back, you're going places. And I got to tell you, that encourages me. I'm very happy to see that. And to see that this momentum is not stalling for the first time in a long time gives me great hope.
Very good. So, Rob, I want to kind of talk to you about 2014, but I want to preface it with this. So, for the first time that I can remember, it seems now we're writing our own future. It used to be that the equipment, we were kind of dictated by the hospitals. You guys should carry monitors. So we're starting to see that evolution now. We're starting to see that motivation now. And we're taking charge of our own career field now instead of those fingers pointing at us saying, this is the way we're supposed to be. Where do we bring the career field in 2014?
Well, It's a very good question. I'm going to answer it eventually, because I'm going to start off by saying that 2014, first of all, is going to be the year of opportunity. We've spent 2013 and probably a bit of 2012 with heroes such as Don and, of course, Matt Zawadzki trailblazing the mobile integrated healthcare sort of foundations for us. We're the great health and social care safety net of not only America. I come from the UK. We were also the same there. We are the go-to guys when, you know, nothing else quite fits right, and therefore we're the master of many, many trades, and we solve many, many problems. We are that great health and social care safety net. The opportunity comes because mobile integrated healthcare requires us to create pathways. And what are pathways? Of course, pathways are those places where we're going to place the patients where it's clinically or indeed socially, in many cases, appropriate to put them. To create those pathways, we're going to have to get out and talk to people. We're going to have to get out and make liaisons and friendships and alliances that maybe we've never had before. We're going to have to become very, very comfortable working with mental health facilities and authorities. We're going to have to become very comfortable and in operating not only with the secondary healthcare, and of course I'm going to be one of those listeners when you talk about all the decoding secondary healthcare for us, but also become very comfortable operating in and amongst primary healthcare as well. So we have to go out and make a lot of friends in the next year, and that's where the opportunities come in, because once they realize that we're in the market to help them, not only help the patient, but help the hospital or the provider or the organization, then doors are going to start to open even more, because they realize what we're capable of. And so, you know, we're going to get into many more things, you know, the great buzzwords of mobile healthcare in the UK. We're going to get into, you know, having treatment at the right time at the right place. We're going to get into lots of treat and discharge. So those opportunities are going to abound for us. And, you know, we are going to be very much in demand from every sector. Secondly, I think next year is a great opportunity in terms of interoperability with our fellow emergency services. Patrick touched on the Boston stuff, but we are very good at we can become very NIMS compliant, very incident command compliant very quickly. And to do that and cross train with our fellow public safety agencies. We are healthcare, but sometimes we have to be public safety. We're kind of the Marine Corps to the medical Navy, but we also have to mix with the Army and the Air Force sometimes. So we have to make sure that we are interoperating and talking the same language. And of course, NIMS is that vehicle to do so. And 2014 is going to be a great opportunity to practice that. As I think Patrick said, there are more and more active shooter disaster type things happening to us, whether it's just coincidence or some sort of some grand plan of someone further up the chain of command, as it were. But we have to be more ready than we've ever been before. So lots of opportunity coming up.
You know, when I think about 2014, and I think 2013 really kind of gave us a good foundation of definition, I would think that a big focus for our career field needs to be in the funding of mobile integrated healthcare. And when we start to think about a little bit of cost share savings, those cost savings and sharing those monies, when we start to think about getting down with the payers and starting to show them the worth of the mobile integrated healthcare, we're not going to be able to sustain this very long, you know, taking care of it ourselves. And as a career field, the work that we're doing in the field or in the topic of mobile integrated healthcare, community paramedicine, advanced practice, whatever you're going to call it, we really need to start saving and sharing that data or those outcomes so we can sit down with those payers to say, now, we just saved you $209,000 in cost avoidance. How about 20% of that savings? Or otherwise, we can transport these people to the hospital again. We can get you those ER bills again. And we really need to start playing hardball with the payers because they don't want to pay. They don't want to pay us. They don't want to pay the hospitals. They don't want to pay the doctors. But we really have to be able to step up to say, look at what we're doing. We're taking care of these, use a Don's word, we're taking care of the sick guy, and we're doing it very cost effective, but with great outcome and making a healthier community. So I would think if anything comes out of 2014, you know, 370 days from now, when we sit down and do the 2014 show in review, hopefully we could say one of the great things that happened in 2014 was that we got a line on some funding for the mobile integrated healthcare program. So, well, with that said, we're really to the end of our show, guys, believe it or not. So instead of closing thoughts that we usually end the show with, Rob kind of hit us last week and said maybe we should talk about some New Year's resolution. And if you want to throw a professional New Year's resolution out or a personal one, Don Lundy?
Nothing against you, Rob, but I don't think I need to pick one time a year and when I look and decide, you know, I'm going to live healthier or I'm going to love my kids or I'm going to tell my wife the truth all the time or whatever the issue is that you're going to put out there. I got to tell you, this year has been, for me, probably one of the most wake-up, slap-in-your-face, all that time that you were going to the gym, Don, and all the health that you were doing doesn't mean that healthcare isn't going to tap you on the shoulder and say, yep, that's what chest pain feels like. And although it has been an awesome year for me, meeting all the members of NEMT and people who want to be members and the discussions. I mean, it's not the roundtable meetings. It's the little corner meetings that you get with three or four medics and talk to them. But I would have to say that if I was going to put out a resolution, it would be to continue to live every day like it's my last day. I think so many people get bogged down in the politics sucks, the federal government sucks, the world sucks, everybody's nasty. I don't like my job, And it gets so negative that it can just really taint your entire view of what a tremendous life all of us have. I mean, we walk this God's earth free and equal, and we're able to pursue any career we want. We have decided to pursue a career where we get up in the morning and we go out and help people. Now, I can't think of anything more exciting and more satisfying than that. Even on the struggling days, when you come home and you say, well, you know, I didn't save any lives and I'm not sure I really helped anybody, but there's that one person scared to death that you held their hand or you put the hand on the shoulder and said, don't worry, nothing's going to happen while you're with me. And that makes that worthwhile. Who would not want to do that kind of job? A lot of us have wonderful families and kids. A lot of us have wonderful friends. A lot of us have fantastic adventures, either at work or a hobby that we have. A lot of us do various things. I think my constant year-round resolution is I've always lived every day like it's my last. That's why I'm kind of wacky, Chris. But that's the right thing to do. I had a brief period of time where I wasn't sure I was going to make it to the next day. And if there's anything, and again, it's hard to talk about that. If there's anything that will make you wake up and say, holy moly, that is it. So that, you know, I don't believe in New Year's resolutions, but I'll play by saying live life every day like it's your last day.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I think that's something we all need to take. And I got to tell you, that's not why you're wacky. But so, Patrick, New Year's resolution?
New Year's resolution for me would be learning to spend the day in gratitude. And so I'm going to kind of piggyback what Don said, having been a patient this year too, in a rather very personal and really bad disease process for a little while. I mean, I don't think I was at death's door, but I don't think I was, you know, too many doors away from it either, had it progressed longer than I did. I would say the one thing I've learned is, you know, to be grateful for stuff. And that's always challenging because, like Don said, you know, you wake up some days and you're like, God, this sucks. Work was awful. I don't think I'm making a difference anymore. But the reality is, and I think what the resolution is, you know, being grateful for what you can do. So, yeah, maybe the day didn't pan out the way you did, but I got this done, or I at least got to talk to somebody and I made their day better. And so I think that the gratitude piece really is the resolution moving forward. I think that that's what I'm going to try and do this year is just try to stay grateful for what I got and not not want more than I need, I guess. I don't know how else to put that, but that's the way I'm taking on the New Year's resolution. And of course, my profession, and of course, my professional goal, just so we're clear, is world domination.
Well, good luck with that. If I were you, I'd buy the game Risk, because that may be the only way that you're going to get close. But so, Rob Lawrence.
Be the same one as it has been for many years. And quite simply, it's to state that life is not a rehearsal. You get one go at it. And so make every single day count and do something that you enjoy and make a difference. So it's kind of like Don's, but that's kind of how I ended up in America, because life is not a rehearsal and you get one go at it. And you've got to go for it when you get the chance and make a difference. Organizationally, we probably have the same resolution as well. Every single day in our organization, we say that we win the EMS prize. What is the EMS prize? Well, the EMS prize, quite simply, is we get to go out and do it again tomorrow. And we're very happy to win that every single day. And that came really home to roost today. We had a cardiac arrest survivor day today where we had a guy called Michael Schneider. And you can read about him. Obviously, we're going to put this out in a few days' time. So go back through some of the archives in the various industry websites. Michael Schneider was rescued by a complete chain of survival. He had bystander CPR, first responder, paramedic, ALS defibrillation, hypothermia, autopulse, and good care. He had a complete chain of survival that brought him back to us cerebrally intact today. And by God, he said he's living every day now and in making the most of it too. So, you know, it just goes to prove that that's what you need to do.
And that's good to hear that those things work out. You know, we don't get to have those stories very much in our career field, and it's good that we do have them. You know, if I think about my New Year's resolutions and, you know, being the person that I am, it's really hard for me to say this, but I don't mind sharing it with you guys, is I've got to be able to find the strength, and I've got to be able to find the courage to finally admit that restaurant in Charleston, South Carolina, has the best lasagna east of the Mississippi. So hopefully, by the time that I get to the year 2014, I will be able to be on the side of Don Lundy and say that, oh my God, this in fact is. Guys, I want to thank you for a great year. We're going to do it again in 2014. We'll probably come to you about the middle of January with the first show. So if you want to go ahead and email the show, you could do that at emsleadership@gmail.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do that at Chief of EMS. And please go over to our Facebook page and become a fan. We'd like to see those fan numbers get up there. I got to tell you that I've been doing this for about 3.5-4 years now. And every year, I can't believe that I have the opportunity to come and share some experience and talk with my friends, you know, kind of share the evenings with you. But I want to thank you for that, and I look forward to doing it again and starting all over in January 2014. So everybody out there, have a great holiday season. Have a safe holiday season. We'll talk to you guys real soon, and happy holidays, everyone.